This call is being recorded.
Hello, everyone. This is Renee Rentmeester with another edition of the Cooking Without Looking TV show podcast. And I'm here today with Robert Kingett. Robert, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
Good, good. And you're in Florida. You're near Tallahassee, you said, right?
Yes.
Ah, okay. And now, as everyone knows, everyone on our show, whether it's a podcast or the TV show, are blind or visually impaired. Tell us a little bit about your blindness journey.
Sure. So my blindness journey is very, it's a unique, to say the least. So I was actually born premature in 1989, so I'm part of the millennial generation. I was a preemie, so that meant that as soon as I came out of the womb, they had to rush me to an incubator, like, very, very quickly, because my lungs weren't working right, and they really had to rush me to try to save my life. And they saved my life, but they gave me too much oxygen in the incubator, and that left me with a detached retina.
Oh my God.
I mean, I guess if you're hearing it for the first time, it's pretty horrifying, but for me, it's basically old news at this point.
Sure. You just moved on.
Right. Yeah. So and I have a theory about my cerebral palsy as well. I think that's where the cerebral palsy came from, because it's actually a neurological disorder. So I suspect the amount of oxygen caused some nerve damage in my brain, and that's also led me to get cerebral palsy. That's just a hypothesis, though. I'm definitely not in the medical field or things like that.
Yeah, but that's very interesting, because I've heard of a lot of people that they're blind only because that they were given too much oxygen, and I never thought about the cerebral palsy part either.
Right. Yeah. So that left me legally blind, and so I had 20/200 vision in my left eye. In my right eye, I couldn't see anything at all. So no light, no shadows, nothing of that sort. I went to the Florida School for the Deaf and the Blind because I actually refused to go to mainstream education. The choice was offered to me, and I refused because I wanted to focus on my education and less so on doing any advocacy work. And also at the time, I was living through a very, very traumatic home life, so there was only so much that I could handle. I didn't want to be an advocate for my high school education because I just had so many things going on and everything like that. I knew that once I got into college that I was going to have to be an advocate for myself, which was totally fine for me. I graduated high school, went to college in Daytona Beach, Florida.
There's a place to go to college, Robert. How many classes did you miss, Robert?
Well,
college in Daytona. I mean, that's like that's pretty. It's like a fun land over there.
Yes, yes, it's really loads of fun. Trust me. That's a really great city to go to college in.
That's like the ultimate college city.
Yes, yes, but I did. But I then moved to Tallahassee, Florida, and I went to Tallahassee Community College, and then I moved again to Mississippi, and then I moved to Chicago, and now I'm actually in Florida once more. So.
You know what I'm thinking as I'm talking to you? First of all, the thing that you were born with, that they had to put you in the incubator, it seems to me most of the people who became blind, like in the 50s and 60s, were because of the prematurity of retinopathy, I think it's called. It was all turning the oxygen on way too high. But you were born almost in the 90s, and you would think that they would have gotten that under control.
You would think so, but I mean, someone actually said, well, you know, you could like sue the hospital, and I'm like, too much time has passed.
Right. You know, that's the same blindness that Stevie Wonder has. He was born sighted, and then like they gave him too much oxygen as well.
Right. But the blindness, it didn't actually stop there. So I'm totally blind now. That's a heck of a story. But so I quite literally woke up on my birthday 3 years ago, hopped in the shower, and then I came out of it again, and I could not see anymore. I actually had a very, very,
wow.
Very yes, that's, yes, I,
how did you manage to wrap your mind around that?
First I called the ER, I called emergency services, and I was kind of like, I really think something is wrong with my optic nerve, and I need to go to the ER like right now, right this moment. So I spent my birthday in the ER room as the doctors were trying to figure out like what happened. How did my vision go from 2200 to zero in the span of about 10 to 20 minutes?
That's not much of a birthday present. That's not much
right.
of a birthday present. How old were you?
I was 28.
Wow. You know, as I'm talking to you, I know that there are a lot of parents when they have a child who is either blind or with cerebral palsy, not both, but when they have one or the other, parents think that the child's life is done. But you have done so much. You've gone to school, you've gone to college.
Yes.
And you know, parents nowadays maybe don't have as much to worry about. What do you think about that?
I think that's true on some level, but I also think that that now it's very, very crucial that parents really learn not just how to adapt their home and things for their blind child. I really want them to learn, you know, about the blindness culture that we have, and I really would not actually focus on try and fixing your child. Just help them navigate through the world as they are, without spending trillions of dollars on
operations and
exactly, on, you know, operations and things that may or may not work, because you get so much more out of life if you learn how to navigate within your own world.
Someone put it one way to me. They said that you can learn how to be blind. You learn the skills of being blind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Of course, I'm a huge proponent of the social model of disability, which means that that we are not disabled. We're actually disabled by the environment that
exactly. It's the other people who are disabling you.
Exactly. Right. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So to kind of outline this a little bit, so the social model of disability, it basically purports, I'm going to use a very, very, very simplified example, but basically it purports that that if the environment was better designed, then we would not have a disadvantage. Like if sidewalks were more regularly maintained, if infrastructure was kept up a lot more, then the environment would improve, so much so that we're not disabled because the sidewalks and everything work for everybody involved. So,
well, you know what? Somebody mentioned, and your point is well taken. Somebody had mentioned that sighted people are light impaired.
Yep.
we need light to see, and if we don't have light, we don't see. So, you know, we're impaired in that way, and if that's the way you look at it. Now, I know when people see your podcast, the picture I'm using, you have a t-shirt on that says, I see ableism. Is that correct?
Yes.
And tell us, educate us all on this, on ableism.
Sure. So ableism is the constant practice of putting disabled people as less than society, basically. It comprises of many forms of discrimination based on the person's disability or disabilities. It can be structural, it can be environmental, it can be so to give you a case in point of two examples. One environmental instance of ableism is just automatically assuming that people can walk a long distance, so they make destinations really far apart from each other. That's an example of environmental ableism. You as an individual could perpetuate ableism without really knowing it by casting the disabled person as just an object to be inspired by,
right.
Without really without really looking at them as
humans.
Exactly. You could have the best intentions, but you're perpetuating ableism. Each and every time that a character is portrayed on TV that is seen as helpless or super gifted,
right?
If they have a disability, that's also perpetuating ableism. Because again, you're casting disabled people into this box.
The superhuman.
That is very different from society. So I wear that shirt quite frequently for two reasons. One is I really want people to really scratch their heads and kind of go, oh, what is this new word that's on his shirt? Ableism. I've never heard of that word before. Let me look it up. Also, I really want people to sort of think about their space in society and how that translates to disabled people.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, like, I've gone to classes and talked to kids in school, like in grade school and stuff. And,
right.
And, you know, they're used to seeing, I remember, like, somebody asking me, well, how do blind people put their pants on? And I said, well, basically, you know, we all know where our legs are. And tomorrow morning, when you start getting ready, you close your eyes and you put your pants on, and then you will know. And somebody even asked me, how do they go to the bathroom? And,
pretty much
the same way we all do. But sometimes it strikes me as funny, you know, there's ableism, there's sexism, there's racism, all the isms.
Yep.
But the thing they have in common is they all dehumanize a person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I'm generally a very progressive person. So these are the kind of things I'm thinking about regularly, how to dismantle, white supremacy and and injustices of any
kind. You know what? It just comes down to treating each other with respect and dignity and just seeing them as another person.
That's literally...
I mean, how simple is that?
That's true, and yet so many people, for whatever reason, they just can't. It's exactly what you said. It all comes down to treating each other as you want to be treated.
Right, and I know that I read an article that struck me a while back where somebody wrote an article like, and she was a woman who was blind, and she said, you know, I'm not your inspiration. I get up. I live my life. You get up. You live your life. You know, I don't look at you as, you know, you are inspiring me just because of one thing or the other.
I highly encourage everybody to check out the late Stella Young's TED Talk. I'm not sure. Inspiration. It's really hilarious, and like I think it encapsulates so perfectly how ableism can manifest in society.
So it's just ingrained in us. You know, it's ingrained when we're little. You know, we were taught that, you know, just if you saw somebody who was who had a disability, you know, don't look, don't stare, you know, like, and if anything, I would tell like my grandchildren, like, well, ask, talk to them, you know, find out. I've been doing this for like 21 years, and I've never, ever, 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 Robert, met one blind person or person with any sort of a disability that said, oh, you know what? I don't want to talk about it. Everyone's like quaking at the bit to talk, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because it's an opportune time to
educate.
Yeah.
Well, Robert, I know that you told me a little bit ago about your recipe, and it's maybe just something special you do. So tell us about your coffee, how you make your coffee different.
Sure, yes. So when I make my coffee, instead of using water, I use milk, which makes it really sweet and really yummy. And yes, I definitely would not suggest it if you are a diabetic or something of that nature. Just no, don't even try it.
Because or it is lactose intolerant.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. But it does, it makes coffee taste so much better, in my opinion. So
sort of mellows it out, huh?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So when you make it in the pot, instead of putting that water in the pot, like what, 2 cups or whatever, you put like 2 cups of milk?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, I gotta try that. Well, you know what? There's Cuban coffee. It's Cafe con Leche, which is exactly the same thing. It's coffee with milk.
Yep. Yep. That's actually where part of the inspiration came from, is trying coffee from different countries and cultures and seeing how they were made. And I'm like, oh, I can do that. So
well, you know what I do after spending all these years in Miami, Robert, you know what I do? I use the American pot, and I put Cuban coffee in the American pot, and I drink the Cuban coffee in the same size cup. Yep. Same size cup as a regular American coffee, and it's delicious. It's like having a dessert in the morning.
Yep, definitely. I so, it helps with the writing also, because it gives me a much needed a kick to get me going in the morning.
And so you can become inspired.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Well, Robert, it's been a blast talking to you. Tell us how, if people want to reach out to you, how can they reach out to you?
Sure, yes. So the best way to reach out is through my website. I, even though I have social media accounts, I don't look at them personally. I have an assistant that looks at them. So the best way to get in touch with me is to send me an email. And you can find everything on my website, which is blindjournalist.wordpress.com.
You want to say that again, because there was a little bit of a breakup. blindjournalist.wordpress.com. Okay. blindjournalist@wordpress.com.
Right. Yes.
Okay, that's great. Well, thank you so much, Robert, for spending time with us this morning. I truly enjoyed it. I'm sure our audience did too.
Yep.
This has been Renee Rentmeester. I'm the creator, executive producer of the Cooking Without Looking TV show and podcast. If you want to reach out to us, it's www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. And we look forward to hearing from you again. Thank you again, Robert.
Thank you for having me.